Earlier this year, in January, on a Wednesday night, one of the young men from our church came forward. College age, 20 I think, maybe 21. I sat down next to him and he looked at me and he said, "Sin has captured my life. I have repented before God for what I have done. I need the prayers of this church and I need their help." I did not know what he had done, and it didn't matter. I stood up in front of the congregation and we talked about this confession and gentle heart, and we prayed for him. And the members of the church gathered in the front and encouraged him, and we began to follow up with him to help him in his journey of repentance and recovery. A week later, he came up to me and said, "Do you think I could do a Wednesday night invitation?" I don't think he'd ever done one before, but you could tell that his heart was working, absorbing, and growing. So the elders give me the authority to lay out the guys for the Wednesday night. So I said, "Yeah, man, 2 weeks from now you can do that." So 2 weeks later, this young man, just a few weeks after tearful confession, on a Wednesday night stood up in front of a group just like this. He stood there quietly a moment, and he looked down and he read 7 verses. "Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaining? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long over wine. Those who go to taste mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things and your mind will utter perverse things. And you will be like one who lies down in the middle of the sea, or like one who lies down on the top of a mast. They struck me, but I did not become ill. They beat me, but I did not know it. When shall I awake? I will seek another drink." It was total silence in the room for the next 10 minutes as this young man poured out his heart about how alcohol had begun to dominate his life, how he was fitting right into the scenarios of the consequences therein, and how he was ready to fight back. It was awesome. It was awesome. We talked about it all the way home that night, Summer and I thought about it when I went to bed that night. Got up the next morning, Thursday morning, still thinking about it, sat down with my coffee in my favorite chair and had a Bible reading all assigned, and I set that aside and just read Proverbs 23 again, thinking about this young man and his courage. I got to the building that day around midday and opened up the computer, and the email at the top of my email list was from Mark Roberts. Mark said, "We'd like to invite you, Chris, to come back and speak at the Westside Lectures. And if you're available to come, it would be great if you could pick a proverb that was on your heart." That is the way our God works. That is the providence of... I responded so quickly, Mark. I wanted to beat these guys to it so badly. I instantaneously sent a reply. "I believe the Lord is working through that young man on me, and I believe God is going to use our work and has established this lesson today to help someone in this room, though I may not know who it is. This is our topic, alcohol and its effect on the Christian and why it happens and what we can do. We need to jump right in. Mark told me I only get 90 minutes. We need to get started." 35, you set your watch, 35 minutes, and then I'll wink at you and preach 10 more. We don't have a lot of time to cover a pretty big topic. By the way, Proverbs 23, we'll be talking about that in a minute. Those were the seven verses that he read. So what I'm going to have to do is assume a couple of things. You need to follow along with me on this. I am assuming that you already know. We got some great young people here with some wonderful families and instruction. I'm going to assume there are a couple of things that you know. So let's start with those. Number one, I'm going to take for granted that everyone in this room knows that modern day alcohol is wrong. I'm not going to preach on that today. I'm going to already assume that you know that the alcohol content in a single beer is enough to compromise you. And wine coolers and wine and other beverages of greater strength, that they bear almost no resemblance at all to first century wine, not the alcohol content nor the way that it was consumed. I'm going to assume that you know and have been taught well by your preachers and elders and parents that the content in these beverages is a no, and we should not be doing it. But I will say this. If you're listening out there and you're thinking, I don't think that's true. I think that because Jesus drank wine, I can have a beer, that it's all the same thing. Let me just ask you to do this. Could you reach out to me, please? I think everybody has the email because I've been getting great emails, encouraging emails from everyone. You can find me on Facebook. There's a little paper we put together a couple of years ago. Tony Mock wrote the original version. He let me kind of toy with it a little bit, and we've added a scientific document to the end. I'd like to send that to you. You reach out to me. It will convince you that what is in modern-day alcohol is wrong. But I'm going to assume today that these Christians know that. Let me give you a second thing. The second thing we're going to take for granted to make this all fit in the time we have is not just that modern day alcohol is wrong, but modern day alcohol is dangerous, incredibly harmful, has done tons and tons of damage. Look, you guys are smart. You don't need some shock treatment today. I didn't know we were going to have three screens, or maybe I'd have been tempted here, but I didn't come with tons of photos and images of broken homes, impoverished conditions, car accidents, disabled teenagers, and funerals. But I could have. We all know those stories. I could have scared you into never touching the stuff, potentially, through all these great cons. I think you're smarter than that. That's what I think. I don't think you need that. You already know that it's dangerous. Now, I will say while we're here, let's take some time in Bible study, that there still are important warnings. It's not shock visual treatment, but we are clearly warned in the wisdom of the Proverbs that that is not where we need to be. Alcohol consumption of a strong form, by the way, everything at your local, where are we? Are we in HEB territory? Where are we? Everything, Brookshire, everything there will hurt you. Look with me in the text. I want to show you some warnings. In Proverbs chapter 23, again, there are warnings. I don't want woe or sorrow. I'm not interested in contentions. I don't like getting wounded or redness of eyes. Life's hard enough without adding tons of problems. He said, alcohol adds tons of problems. Problems that you don't want. You look at it, verse 30 and following, you love what you see, but verse 32, it stings you, it bites you, it puts a poison in you. Verse 33, you'll do things that were so out of character, dominoes that can't be stood back up, that you would have never touched those dominoes. You find yourself pushing on it, verse 33, because you're mentally out of place. Verse 35, you'll get hurt. Verse 35, you'll hurt others. You'll feel terrible. You'll wish you'd never done it. And you'll wake up the next day and just want more. I do not need any of that in my life. This isn't the only warning. Go back a couple of chapters to Proverbs chapter 20. I'll show you a few of those here. This idea of strong drink and its impact, it's all over. In verse 1, I think that will suffice to get us going. In Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 1, wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is intoxicated by it is not wise. Doesn't take much today of what is offered to intoxicate you and to diminish your wisdom. I don't like being mocked. I don't like getting into fights. I don't like fighting with my family members. I don't like fighting with my friends. I like getting along. You know what wine does? You know what alcohol does, it makes fighters of us. All of a sudden we're on edge and we're contentious and we're arguing. I just don't need any of that. I want to enjoy my life as a Christian. Alcohol has nothing to offer me. Let me show you one other, and we mentioned it last night. Go to Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31, verse 4. This is Lemuel's mama, as we studied last night. And one of the grand instructions that he was to be given. He was a man of great responsibility, as are you and as am I. Lots of good things that we want to do in this life. We need to make sure we're ready to do it. Look with me in verse 4. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to desire strong drink. For they will drink and forget what is decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted. Give strong drink. I want you to pay attention to this. To him who's perishing. And wine to him whose life is bitter. Let him drink and forget his trouble, his poverty, and remember his trouble no more. Now, he's not condoning anybody drink alcohol, but he said, you know who alcohol, what alcohol is really for? It's for people who've given up. It's for people who are dying. It's for people who are wrapped in bitterness. It's for people who've lost every benefit of their life, and all they have now is poverty, and they just want to forget. They are without hope. I am not. I'm looking to the left here. I'll look over here. Let me scan. Yep, looks consistent. I am not looking at a group of hopeless people here. We are filled with hope. We have great expectations for our future. What's she saying? She's saying, King, you're a man of hope. You don't need this stuff. It's not for anyone, but if it was, it would be for ones who just had absolutely no purpose in life. There's one thing I can tell you today is you've got purpose in this life. Alcohol and its impact. No, here's the question for today. Here's what I really want to talk about. If you and I know that modern-day alcohol is wrong, you've all heard that sermon, and we know, look at the verses, we know that it's dangerous, I want to know, why do people still drink it? That's what I want to know. Particularly, and I'm going to give it to you in the form of this question, I'm going to start with this here, why do young people drink? And that has to do with some of the research that I did, and I'll tell you more about it in a minute. But if young people know, let's add the word Christian to this. I'm looking at a bunch of Christian young people. So let me get this straight. Let me just see, make sure I've got this straight. You already know that it's wrong, and you already know that it can hurt you, and yet young people are still doing it. Why? I got to figure it out. It became my life mission. Why is this happening? What's going on to make that leap possible? And we're not just talking about Christian young people. There probably is a teenager in the room today who has been drunk in the last 2 weeks. But they're not the only one this sermon is for. There are probably adults in this room who have beverages hidden in their cupboards. Hidden in their cupboards. Or tucked away in a refrigerator somewhere. There are Christian servants who, when they go off on vacation with their spouse, they leave all their inhibitions behind and they drink things and do things. That happens. Why is that happening? I wanted to know. Now, the reason why the question is formulated in this way, why do young people drink, is that was the source of the search. I started trying to read things and try to figure out things and came up with a bunch of different lists. There have been a bunch of tests run on this for why responsible people do irresponsible things. Why do young people in the know do something that is pretty thoughtless? Now, what I came up with is a list of 7 reasons. And I would argue, and actually kind of inquire of you later if you want to follow up on this, if this resonates with you. But what it says is, anytime someone drinks when they know they shouldn't, it's because something has happened in here and has produced that. Let me show you this list. Here's the list. Number one, it's because, and I tried to order this in terms of popularity at the top, the most often stated thing, sort of Family Feud style. Number one, people just want to fit in with others. Now, we know what the Bible says. I mean, these guys could quote scripture over here. We know that we're supposed to expose darkness, Ephesians 5. We already mentioned today in 1 Corinthians 15 that we're supposed to stay away from evil company. But you know, sometimes you just want to fit in with your buddies. If you've got friends at school who are drinking, sometimes you're just tired of fighting. If you have a job and you spend time in your job with friends who like to do this kind of thing, every once in a while you're going to feel this desire to just fit in. But sometimes it's even bigger than that. You say, well, I don't hang out with friends like that. That's great. Good decision. But sometimes it's a little bit bigger. The social norm, you guys understand. I just really thought, you know, highly about the warnings that Russ gave a minute ago about what it's like being raised in this generation. If you are a normal teenager in America, you have a severe potty mouth problem. There is tons of profanity. There is lots of alcohol and open promiscuity. That's our culture. That's the television shows. That's the movies. Those are the kids at school. So, you know, we're supposed to be strangers and aliens. You've all heard that sermon. We're not going to be like the world, and we're going to fight all that trend. But sometimes inside of you, you just want to stop fighting. Just be like everybody else. Number three, I think we all know what this is like. This is not age specific. In fact, I would argue none of this is age specific. Sometimes I'm just tired of all the problems I'm having to deal with. Maybe you got issues at school, maybe issues with your parents, maybe issues at work, and you know what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to pray about that and read the Word of God and think it through, but man, every once in a while, I just want to leave. I don't want to solve problems. That hurts this. I just want to leave those problems behind. You're not the only one that feels that. That is one of the reasons. Number four is, this is weird because this came up on every list. Every list. 10 lists. I'm bored. I don't have anything to do. It's Friday night. There's nothing going on. I'm tired of sitting here. I think I'll go drink something that could potentially end my life. I don't know. There's a leap there. We're going to talk about why that leap happens. It's a silly little leap, isn't it? In fact, if I could go ahead and get you thinking about this, as you see this list, this is not like a terrible list, is it? I mean, I kind of have all this stuff happening to me kind of all the time. I don't even really see anything sinful yet. I mean, like if you sin because you're bored, or if you're just tired of fighting or you want to escape your problems, sometimes we get bored and we're just looking for something to do. Number five, express rebellion. If there's anything on this list that you could say, hey, that's sinful, it'd probably be that, express rebellion. But you know what? I still feel that sometimes too. Sometimes I'm just tired of following the rules, guys. I don't really mean like biblically speaking. I mean more in terms of, you know, being under the leadership of a very godly and wonderful wife. Sometimes I just don't want to do what she said, but I do. Look, this is just real. You don't want to do what your parents said? Yeah, I get it. We all deal with that. I've got some pretty good bosses where I work, but some of you don't. Sometimes you just don't want to do what they say. There's a lot of that. Let me go ahead and give you these last two here. Sometimes we understand what the Bible says about, you know, sowing the seed and tending it and sticking with it and being disciplined and making good choices. It's all going to pay off. But sometimes I just want to feel better right now. I just want to feel, is that okay if I just want to feel better right now? I don't want to wait. Mark, brother, sometimes I just want that first marshmallow, dude. I just want to eat that marshmallow. He's got a great sermon about waiting on the second marshmallow. I mean, the researcher has not yet left the room, and I'm like, see you in a minute. The research says you need to wait. Sometimes I just don't want to wait. I don't want to wait. I want it now because we just get tired of patience. I do. And then lastly is ignite self-confidence. You just get tired of being the one that's so quiet or over on the side or overlooked. Nobody likes to be overlooked. Nobody likes to be ignored. But boy, if you drank that or you swallowed that pill or you smoked that, it would ignite something in you. You'd be the center of attention. That's really tempting for people. Well, take a look at this list. I've already said it, so I'll be brief on this. First of all, that's a pretty mild list of things. I mean, I don't really see anything necessarily that's super sinful there, but I also should tell you this. This list never goes away. Like, if the punchline of today's sermon is, the only way to keep you from drinking stuff and smoking stuff and doing stuff is for that list of seven things to dissipate, you're going to be drunk a lot. Because these seven things really don't ever kind of go away, right? Anybody older than me that would agree with that? Like, I still deal with this stuff all the time. The question is, how are we getting from feeling that to the background picture? How are we getting from feeling that to drinking that? It kind of seems like a big leap to me. And I want to suggest to you why that is. Let's go ahead and head over to 1 Peter chapter 4. I think that's really going to help us. We'll reference it and read the first seven verses in a moment. But I would like to reveal to you, after some self-evaluation on why I made some leaps I ought not have made, what I'm convinced is the reason why this happens. You need to look with me at these three circles. These three circles represent you processing an emotion. You take any one of the seven. You don't have to do this, but you can if you'd like. Just pick one of the seven. I mean, some of you are bored right now, so start with that. Just say, man, I'm bored, all right? Look, nothing here is for a minute, okay? Look, put that in the middle. I feel something, and I don't like it. That's the one thing about those seven things. I don't like what I feel before I address that. Put it in the middle. If you process step one, step two, step three, it's going to do damage. I want to show you what that looks like. If when you feel one of these things, like I want to rebel, I'm tired of fighting, if your first thought is yourself, it's going to catch up to you. I want you to watch as I wrap myself in a very comfortable, bubble wrap-ish, I personal pronoun dialogue. I want to fit in with others. I think I should fit in with others. I deserve to fit in with others. I just want to be normal sometimes. I'd like to know what it feels like to be normal. I think I deserve that. I'm pretty tired of my problems. You tracking my pronouns here? I'm pretty tired of all my problems. I'm tired of having to face this. I need some relief. I need some reprieve. I'm bored. I shouldn't be bored. I should be able to do something exciting. I should be able to do something that I haven't been able to do before. I don't like the rules. I don't like what I'm being told to do. Every once in a while, I just want to go out there and do something I want to do. I want to get rewarded right now, and I want to feel great about myself. If the way you address one of those seven things is I-centered, you, the Y stands for you, you're going to come up with really bad ideas. Now, I don't know if those ideas are going to flesh out. More on that in a minute. But you'll start thinking about things you never thought you would think about before. Like, maybe I'd like to go try a beer. Maybe that guy at school keeps offering me that pill. Maybe I should try that. Or my girlfriend keeps talking about this or that. When you wrap it up in, I want to fix what I don't like about my life. You hear those pronouns? You're going to come up with some kind of bad ideas. But there's some good news. There's hope. There's hope that you can think about you and come up with a bad idea unless you do this. This is when it gets scary. The first thing I'm thinking about is me and what I want. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out and find others who support me. I'm going to go out and find other people who say, you know what? You do deserve some instant reward. I want to surround myself with other people who approve and enable what I want to do. You really should fit in with others for a while. You've been working so hard, you do deserve to rebel a little bit. Go get me some friends. You guys have all heard the old line, you show me your friends, I'll show you your future. That's what you're looking at here. You can always find friends who want to see you do something kind of dumb. You know why? It makes them feel better about the dumb stuff they're doing. They're going to say, yeah, you really should drink that. You really should smoke that. You really should go there. Now, here's the thing. For most of the young people in the world, not you guys, I love you guys, you got an added help. We'll talk about it in a minute. But for most of the young people in the world, yo is all it takes. Y and O. I'm thinking about me, and I go out and find people who support what I'm going to do. But you can't do that. You don't have that option because you believe in God. You know what the truth is. So just because you thought about yourself and someone else said you should do it, you're still probably not going to do it. But then the strangest little thing happens among Christians just before they make a bad decision. They think about Jesus. Oh, hey, that's a really great idea. Let's think about Jesus. And you think, well, wait a minute. Why would they think about Jesus just before they do something really harmful? Because you're a Christian. You have to think about Jesus. You can't just ignore the fact that he's there. But do you see in the sequence of thought, where did I put Jesus? Where did I put him? I put him third. I put him last. By the time I start thinking about Jesus, I've already decided whatever happens here, I'm going to make this better for myself. I've already found friends who are cheering me on to bad behavior. And now I think about Jesus, so I start saying some kind of ridiculous things. If you add Jesus to the end of the thought, you're going to start thinking things like, well, you know, Jesus will understand. Or Jesus will forgive me. I'm a teenager. I'm in my 20s. Hey, let me tell you, that just keeps on going. I'm only 70. Ridiculous thinking about Jesus. There's no age limit to this. If you tag Jesus on last, you're going to start making him the biggest cheerleader for bad choices. How's that possible? Because I already know what I want to do and I already have a support system. And you might even say it, where are you out there? Who are you and where are you? Who is it out there? Somebody might actually say, well, Jesus drank wine, so I can have a beer. Nobody with clear thinking would ever say that, or knowledge of the Scripture. But we tag Jesus on to the end. This is a dangerous way to operate, and 1 Peter 4 is going to show us that it's not the right way. I want you to remember two little acronyms as we get to the end of this today. The first one is YOJ. It doesn't make a neat little word, but it's yourself, others, and Jesus. Or it also stands for years of jail, because that's where that goes. That's where that goes. Sometimes. Go to 1 Peter 4. Let me read a few verses with you. 1 Peter chapter 4, please. This is about alcohol. It's about drinking parties. It's about all the bad decisions that get made when this circle comes together in this sequence. Except it's telling us to do it a little bit differently. 1 Peter chapter 4 in verse 1. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose. Because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. For the time, verse 3, already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality and lusts and drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all of this, they're surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and they will malign you, verse 4. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. Two more verses. For the gospel has for this purpose been preached even to those who are dead, that though they are judged in the flesh as men, they may live in the spirit according to the will of God. The end of all things is near. Therefore, be of sound judgment and sober spirit, for the purpose of prayer. Where I put the clicker. I'll find it in a minute. There it is. It's all there. Jesus is there. Verse 1 and verse 7. He's at the beginning and at the end of that section. Did you see that? The suffering, sacrificial, focused Jesus. Verse 7, the returning Jesus. Jesus is there. He's just not there. He's there, but he's not there. He's not the third circle. Others are there too, like the bad others. They're found in verse 3 and verse 4. In verses 4 and 5, they want you to do bad things, but you're not going to listen to them. And you're there too in verse 1, 2, and 3, the flesh. I want to say one more thing before we turn this around. You need to be in 1 Peter 4. Whenever we order it this way, you start thinking about your flesh more than your spirit. You surround yourselves with people who tell you it's okay to indulge the flesh, and before you know it, even Jesus is defending it. But I have a feeling we can do a little better, don't you? I think we can do a little better. I'm convinced of something, and I'm very thankful for the chance to be here to say it to you guys of all ages. I'm thankful to the leadership here for the chance to be here. I'm thankful for this weekend. All my kids are here. It means a lot to me. And for me, it culminates in this lesson this weekend to one thing that I get to tell you. First of all, you see that stuff on the right? You're never going to get rid of that stuff. I'm not telling you to stop being bored and stop having problems and stop wanting things now. You're never going to get rid of that. You've got to learn to deal with it better. And this is what I came here to tell you. You must begin with Jesus. Go down the list. I want to fit in with others. Your first thought ought to be Jesus. Jesus is here with me. Jesus is my Lord and my King. Jesus gave his life for me. Jesus is my support and my Redeemer. Jesus preached some things about that. Jesus did some things about that. I can pray to God through Jesus about that. If you throw all the I's out and the me's and the my's and you replace it with, I want to rebel, but Jesus, it's going to change your life. It's going to change everything about your decisions. It's going to change every idea. Remember I told you, when you start with yourself, you start thinking weird ideas you never thought you'd think. But when you start with, I want more self-confidence, what did Jesus say about that? I want instant reward, what did Jesus do in His life? You will come up with great ideas. I believe in our young people. Russ is right, the generation, the society is a mess, but I believe in you guys. I believe this is the present state of the church, these young people, and will continue into the future. But you've got to get control of the way you think. Your first thought after trouble will always tell the story. What if we do this? What if we say, I'm going to think about Jesus, I'm going to read about Jesus, I'm going to pray through Jesus, I'm going to consider how did Jesus handle His problems? How did Jesus interact with society? What did Jesus do when He had downtime? It's going to help me. Then you go out and you find others, but it's a different set of others. You see, now you're going out and you're finding other people who also support the will of Jesus. It's going to change your life. I'm facing a problem. Jesus would have me do this. I love Jesus. Then you go out and you find a friend who also loves Jesus. Well, you're really taking care of your life here. You're going to make great life decisions. I go and I find my parents who love Jesus, and I ask them to help me with my boredom, my problem, my temptations. You go and gather with God's people. Do you know why young people and older ones don't listen to good counsel like they should? Because there's a why in the middle. When there's a why in the middle, you can walk. I don't care. You can go Charlie Brown. It doesn't matter. I'm not listening because I don't want to listen. What you're saying does not promote what I'm about. But when what you're about is Jesus, you're going to want to spend your time around people who love Jesus. And then you think about yourself. First, I think about the Son of God. Then I go talk to people who love the Son of God, and then I decide, what should I do about my boredom? How should I handle my desire to rebel? What is the right thing to do? Well, that fits a little better than Yaj. We call this lesson the joy of sobriety. It's not just that sobriety brings you joy, it's because you're going to need joy in order to achieve it. You're going to need the joy of the Lord in order to preserve it. Or if you've fallen, like the brother I told you about in the beginning, to come back to God. Jesus, others who support Jesus, and yourself. And by the way, when you do that, you will not drink. You say, well, you can't say that. You can't say, I'll never drink. You will never drink. You can't say, I'm not going to fall down. You will not fall down. You can't say, well, Chris, maybe I go to... You will not do this if you start with Jesus. You'll never do it if you start with Jesus. That's the power of the Son of God, our great King and ruler. And by the way, we've been studying this for the last 2 days. Go back with me to Proverbs. All of what we've been talking about effectively, if you'll go back with me to Proverbs chapter 1, is about this process and the way that it works. Do you remember what David talked about last night in the first session? The first point he made was in chapter 1, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. When the Lord is at the beginning, you're going to do great. When the Lord is at the end, it may be too late. I did not plan for that to rhyme. That was a total accident. When you start with the Lord, you're going to do great. You're going to do great things. You're going to be awesome. When you put them at the end, bad ideas infiltrate the mind before Jesus can get there. What we studied the other night was, in verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning. Lord, beginning. Please don't forget that. Lord, beginning. And then verses 8, 9, and 10, hear my son your father's instruction, do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. What's he telling you to do? He's saying, choose the second circle wisely. What you want to do is surround yourself with others who also love the Lord, like your mom and your dad, if the Lord has blessed you with such. Don't let sinners entice you. And the thing is, cool news, If you start with Jesus, you won't want to circle yourself with enticing sinners because they won't serve Him, and that won't work for you. And then, and I really enjoyed the study today, look in chapter 4. And then in chapter 4, verses 23 and following, you have these four things. And maybe you circled them in Proverbs chapter 4. Now we get to talk about you. You ultimately, and I thought it was so well stated today, you got to go out there and make decisions, no matter how old or young you are. You've got to do it. Jesus is not going to do it. You've got to do it. Other people aren't going to do it. You've got to do it. But do it third. Do it after you've considered Him and others. Once you've done that, now verse 23, your heart. Verse 24, your mouth, both what goes out and what goes in. Verse 25, your eyes. And verse 26, your feet. Will do great things. I am not convinced. I've got two teenagers here. I don't think I'm allowed to talk about them, but not by name, Hannah and Luke. Definitely not by name. We don't sit around our house doom and gloom and everything like, oh, summer. I sure hope they don't mess up. I sure hope they don't do something that they regret. They knock over some domino, breaks the whole table. We don't have those conversations in our home. If you're in a home where the best your parents give you is, I hope you don't mess up, your parents need a pep talk. We don't have teens who just won't mess up. We have teens who are going to change the world, who are awesome, who are song leaders and prayers and Bible class teachers and visitors and people of great faith. You will do great things with your heart, your mouth, your eyes, and your feet if you learn to start with Jesus through prayer, through Bible study, and through self-reflection. Well, I've got to say one more thing. You guys have been great. Knowing that this lesson was going to be preached the other night, I took that young man aside. It's been 6 months since he came forward and then delivered that really wonderfully done lesson. And I asked him, I said, man, I kind of knew the answer already, but I asked him anyway in private, how's it going? But I already knew what he was going to say because I'd seen some things in terms of circles change in his life. I'd seen him to make changes in doing his Bible class material and coming to church more regularly and in talking about Jesus. We've been texting about Jesus. I saw how in the last 6 months he stopped spending time with those friends and he started spending time with godly friends. I already knew the answer because he rearranged his life. But he gave me a little more than I was hoping for. He said, Chris, that problem is gone. Well, he said, I'll fight it the rest of my life, but I know how to fight it. And he said, but I got to tell you, there are a few other things in my life I didn't know if I was ever going to be able to fix. And they're getting better too. He's making awesome decisions. How did he do it? Really started with the middle circle, didn't it? He removed a focus on himself and he saved it for later and he placed Jesus in the center of his life. I'm just wondering, hey, I'm supposed to offer an invitation, right? It's session two, invitation offering. Got these rows up here. If you're sitting out there right now, it may be alcohol, it may be promiscuity, it may be profanity, it could be anything. It's all the same. It's all the same. It's all sin. It all hurts. And maybe you're sitting there thinking, I've tried everything except one thing I haven't tried, and that is get the eyes out of the conversation and change it to Him. If you want to get you out of the middle for a minute and see what it's like to just consider what Jesus wants you to do and be surrounded with 563 people who love Jesus too, you have been given that opportunity. It belongs to you, and it comes right now as we stand together and sing.